Yeah, Miami, South Beach, bringing the heat, Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 5 of Homers at the Bat. This is Jeff Crisco here with Joe Gruen. Today we'll be talking about the NL East. You're going to get 3 back-to-back-to-back. We did an AL Central one that's yet to be published, and tomorrow we're going to be doing another one. So
probably the AL East.
Yeah, probably the AL East. Going to get a few podcasts out in a row. So, Joe, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. So, do you want to tell everybody about how you may be writing for the same side as me?
Yes, indeed. So I just got off the phone with Max Kirschbaum. Is that his name?
Matt
Kirschbaum.
Yeah.
A member of the tribe, I'm assuming. I got off the phone with him. We had a nice discussion about potentially joining his fantasy writing staff for Fantasy Sports Warehouse.
Yeah, it's the site that we've mentioned a few times that I've been writing for. They've got a lot of big plans. I'm really excited. They made me the lead fantasy football writer, which is weird because, I don't know if I'm that good at fantasy football.
Yeah, you know, it's real funny because you were not you were a person that started out as a person who played basketball in high school, and then you were a big baseball guy for as long as I've known you, and recently you just got into football maybe a few years ago, right?
Yeah, really a few years ago. What it was I just got so mad at Brian winning our fantasy football league every year, like every single year, and I was like, you know what? I'm learning fantasy football. I'm learning football. I'm doing all this stuff. And I really had to sit down, and I started from scratch because I don't know if we've talked about that league, but it has the most ridiculous freaking settings on Earth, so no real cheat sheet that you're going to find is going to work. So you really have to start from scratch, and that I think doing that really taught me how to evaluate players and do all that. And then I've just sort of started applying that to evaluating, you know, players for myself. So
yeah, I'm still not sure what to do in that league. I'm at a complete loss, really.
So if this is your last year, I will tell you this time next year about how the way that I figured out how to crack the league. Because I went from, like, a bottom feeder every year to now I think I missed the playoffs this year, but, like, because I didn't start Pierre Thomas, 1 week I lost a game. And that league is incredibly competitive, but I've got the nut cracked. I figured it out. So what? I'll let you know.
That'd be nice. Yeah, I've done well the last 2 years, and I've got my own strategy, but it's super basic, and I've really relied on some major in-season hits. So
yeah, and you'll be surprised with all the convoluted rules. It's a very simple way to parse them out. It's kind of insane, but
nice. Good to know.
Yeah. So all right. So like I said, today we're gonna be taking a look at the NL East. Last season, the leaders in the NL East were the Washington Nationals. They had a record of 96-66.
Yep.
And their season ended with a divisional playoff loss to the Giants, 3-1. Joe, what do you think about the 2014 Washington Nationals? Were they successful in their goals?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they set out last year to be the best team in the league. Or at least see if they could be, while healthy, the best team in the league. And they came out on top with, I believe, the best record in the league. So, and was, you know, without a little bit of luck and a little bit of fortune for the Giants, they probably go all the way to the World Series and do some damage.
I tend to agree with you. We talked about it in the first podcast of this, way back when it was during the playoffs, about how the only way and reason the Giants beat the Nationals was essentially pure dumb luck. They just sort of just kept getting handed games again and again and again. Especially that whole thing where there was the the run scored on the wild pitch. I'm forgetting what game it was, but it was a high leverage situation. And then, like, two pitches later, there's another one, and Buster gets thrown out at the plate. It was, like, the weirdest series of events. But but it was a lot of dumb luck, and it was that awesome 18-inning game where Brandon Belt just crushed it at the end.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Everybody wanted to go home, and Brandon was like, don't worry, guys. We're going home. So I agree. They were very they were very successful last year for a lot of reasons. I think first and foremost is that they were built around their pitching staff.
Yeah.
That's no surprise. I mean, when you look at Strasburg, Zimmerman, Gio Gonzalez, and the first year of Doug Fister over there, who I'm a big fan of, and then the young guy, Rourke, they were assembled that they were going to pitch. They were just going to pitch you to death. And the reason that they were so successful is that they successfully executed this. And Joe, I teased you that I was going to give you a stat that was going to kind of blow your mind. I was looking at Baseball Reference for the National League, the wins above replacement for the pitchers.
Yeah.
That's 12.1. Okay, 12.1 wins above replacement. Can you guess who had the second place wins above replacement?
For all for a team pitching staff?
Yeah, just for the National League, and it's just starters.
It's just National League, just starters. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say the Giants, but they didn't have that good of a team, right?
No, I'd like to say the Giants too, but they were actually below average for the NL.
Oh no! So let me actually guess. How about the Atlanta Braves?
No.
No?
They weren't too far behind. They were 1.7 wins behind this other team. But I'll give you a hint. You hate them, and I hate them.
The Dodgers.
Yeah. They have the best pitcher in baseball, Clayton Kershaw. So they were in second place. They were 5 wins above replacement. So the National pitching, the starters were 7. They were 7.1 wins better than the Dodgers.
They were a whole nother team and a half.
Yeah, which is that difference is roughly the difference between the Dodgers and the Rockies, and the Rockies were second to worst in the National League. So they were highly successful because they built the team to focus on one area, and that's pitching, and they crushed it. They destroyed it. They did everything we could. And then they got better this year. They got Max Scherzer.
Right.
So they're going to run away with it. They're going to win 100 games this year, I honestly believe.
Yeah, I mean, they led the league. I would have to – I mean, 100 games, that's, you know, that's like trying to say someone's going to have 100 losses. It almost never happens. But they were close last year. They had 96. They have a 3.03 ERA, which is very good. It was best in the league. They had they led the league in innings pitched, second in quality starts. They were second in the league in innings pitched, second in quality starts. Batting average against was actually I think they were 11th in that, but anyway, they had a good strikeout to walk ratio as a team. Just very good. And you mentioned a guy who actually is not even going to be on their starting in their starting rotation this year, which was Tanner Roark, who had just a great year for the second year in a row. He was kind of pushed out by Max Scherzer, which means they've got another guy in the wings in case, say, Doug Fister doesn't work out or Gio blows his arm out or just whatever, you know, happens with them. They have another guy to fall back on.
Yeah, and that's actually going to be huge for them in 2015, I think, because there's just been a rash of arm injuries, and I'm not sure what it is. It might be that coaches are coached now to protect the pitcher's arms as they come up through the system, and then they don't prep them to be ready for the majors. But everybody's blown out elbows and shoulders. And so I honestly think that one of the things we'll in a couple years, people will start talking about how important that sixth starter is. That swing guy in the pen, because he needs to be able to come in and perform. and you have to be able to rely on him, not every day, but he's going to have to, well, every fifth day, but he's going to have to come in for you. And I think Roark's going to do great in that role.
I agree. I think we talked about it last podcast or the podcast before, just how important it is in baseball to be able to go on runs. And if you can't win, you know, 5-10 games in a row, or go a 10-game, you know, 8-2 stretch, or have a very successful month, then you're not going to win your division, and you're not going to make it into the playoffs, or you're going to have a hard time getting into the playoffs. So it's so important that you have just a solid 1-5. It's not a league where you can just survive on a great solid 1-3 and then have a terrible back end. You really have to be solid all the way around.
Yeah, we did talk about that last podcast, and that's actually one of the reasons why I think they're going to hit 100 games this year. You replace the 30 or so starts from Tanner Roark with 30 or so starts from
Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer, thank you. And I mean, right there, that puts them in the position to win those 100 games. And you also figure if Bryce Harper stops running into walls, they'll take that offense. Will take another step forward. And with the development of Ian Desmond and Anthony Rendon, I think that they're poised to take a big step forward this year. And
Bryce Harper, you know, he's only 22 years old.
That's true. He's the youngest of the bunch. We sort of think of him as this player because it feels like he's been around for years now, and he's 20. He's 21, or he's going to be 22. It's like, mm-hmm. by all accounts, this guy should be in AA, or right. maybe he's tearing up AAA. But for him to have been in the majors for years now, it's an incredible testament to how good of a talent he is, and the fact that people are harping on him for not being as good as Mike Trout. Like, how can you put that as a comparison? Mike Trout may go down as the greatest baseball player to ever play the game when it's all said and done, and Harper's getting bashed on for not being as good as him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just – that's something that I think has just followed him, because he was always compared to Trout from the beginning, from the time they were in the minors, but also because he was selected as the guy that everyone was talking about when no one was talking about Trout. So, I mean, this is like a high school phenom. Everybody's talking about him, expecting him to be the greatest of his generation, and it's looking like he's not going to come close to what could be the greatest baseball player of all time in Mike Trout.
Yeah, I think it a good compare, because, yeah, they were always compared, but I think people latched on to him at, like, sort of like people are like, well, in the 90s, they're like, well, I'm not a Bulls fan, you know. The Chicago Bulls, I love the Knicks, because the Knicks are like the next best team.
I'm a Pacers guy.
Yeah, I'm a Pacers guy, or I'm a Rockets guy, and it's just being contrarian. And then when Mike Trout is clearly that much better, then they're like, well, Bryce Harper, he's trash, why isn't he hitting better?
It's right.
Like, it's like, calm down, he's 22, or he's going to be 22, he's going to be incredible. I feel like, for the next decade, we're going to be watching Bryce Harper and Mike Trout fight it out, and it's going to be awesome.
Right. It's silly. When you think back at, like how many great players coexisted, you're talking about, like, I don't want to delve into the steroid era, but you got, like, Barry Bonds and Griffey and Mark McGwire and Sosa and all these guys that, you know, without the steroids, let's just fantasize in a world where they don't take steroids for a second, all of those guys are Hall of Famers. So, and maybe, you know, top 10 players all time or top 20 players all time. So,
yeah, there's, going back to Bonds for a second, I mean, we're Giants fans, we have to digress. There's a Twitter account that I follow. It's called Ace of MLB Stats or something. And he just digs through stats archives and pulls out crazy stats. And there's all these stats about Barry Bonds, like, before he was supposedly started taking steroids, and he was already going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, which is why the whole steroids thing is ridiculous. Because back when he was like skinny Barry Bonds, he was the only.
Before he was big Barry Bonds, he was a 500, the only 500-500 player in history.
Yeah, he was 500-500. It was his OBP that was really huge. That was crazy. His batting eye. There's a joke where you could tape a bat to Barry Bonds' elbow protector, and it would still draw more walks than Jeff Francoeur. That was a joke going around a few years ago. Nice. So, digression over, but yeah, Bonds, one of the greatest all time.
Yeah, and I mean, Bryce Harper, it's going to be the same thing. You know, he might not be the Bonds of his generation, but it's like Bonds to Griffey, you know? You're talking about let's say he didn't have all those injuries. You're talking about two of the greatest of all time. So it's really just, it's apples and it's splitting hairs.
One last thing, we'll talk about Griffey's injuries, then we'll move on to one last thing about the Nationals and then go on. But one of the saddest things I've ever seen was it was a chart of cumulative career wins above replacement for all these great players, and they just go up and up and up and up, and based on the number of seasons in the league, and Griffey's just goes up and up and up, and then just plateaus.
Yeah.
Just stops. His last 3, 4, 5 years in the league, when he was in Chicago and Cincinnati, and then he goes back to the Mariners, and he's like falling asleep in the dugout. It was just sad. Like
it was really sad, and it's just, you know, he was one of those players that played well beyond the point where some, I think, would have liked to see him just hang up his cleats, and some probably think it was admirable, but you know, whatever. Anyway, Griffey's not on the Nationals. I would like to talk about some other Nationals guys, because we've got they can't have Bryce Harper running the walls next year because they have two of their outfielders on the DL in Denard Span and Jason Wirth, which has led to a very interesting situation that I don't think they were planning on this year, where they've they're going to give Michael Taylor, their top prospect, or their top hitting prospect at least, a crack at that center field spot.
I honestly don't know much about Michael Taylor. I'm looking here. It looks like he's a center fielder. Can you fill me in a little bit on this? Is it because of the Span injury? You think he's going to be out that long that Taylor's going to get an honest look at it, or is he just a
fan? I think Taylor's going to get an honest look at it. He's not ultra young. He's 24. Certainly before... He's about that age where it's time to see if he can crack the big league roster. Denard Span looks like he has a core muscle surgery. Here he had core muscle surgery this month, so it just happened a couple days ago. So he's going to be out for a while. And Jason Wirth had arthroscopic shoulder surgery in January, so those guys could... You know, hate to say it, but they could be out for the whole year, and we could be looking at a whole season of Michael Taylor, which is actually not a terrible thing for this team. They have a strong enough roster where they can kind of hide him at the end and let him develop.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry. I was gonna pull up his stats here real quick.
Okay. While you're doing that, I do want to soapbox a little bit about my 100 wins. Okay. I don't think it's a crazy assertion, especially when you consider their bullpen situation. You figure their starters are going to go
their bullpen's
long.
Great.
Yeah, their starters are going to go long. I mean, every guy you're looking at here goes 5, 6, 7 innings every time. If they can't do it, you've got Roark as your long relief man. Then you hand it over to Casey Jansen and Drew Storen, and it's all over, Joe.
Casey Jansen, Matt Thornton, too.
Oh, Matt Thornton. Before they even know what happened, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
Craig Stammen had a great year. Jerry Blevins. I mean, they've had a lot of success with those bullpen guys that they've developed now. A lot of these guys have been on the team for, with the exception of Matt Thornton, for, you know, 4 years or more.
Matt Thornton's a lot older than I thought he was. He's 38 and a half years old. He's going to he might go all Joe Nathan on us.
Yeah, he might, but yeah, you never know. They'll probably use him. I'm assuming he's in there as a specialist.
A one-out guy? He's just a lefty.
Yeah, he's the guy that, you know what Affelt used to be before we leaned on him really hard. But yeah, where's, let me see. So I've got Michael Taylor, just to shift back to him. Last year in the minors... he was in AAA, didn't get a whole lot of time in AAA, but in AA, between AA and AAA, He had 428 at bats, so you can expect to see a rise of that this year, depending on how long those other guys are out. But he hit 23 home runs, 37 stolen bases, 304 average, 390 OBP, 526 slugging, 915 OPS. Strikeout to walk ratio is 57-144, so they'd probably like to get that down a little bit. But you can't argue with a 20-30 season, or almost a 25-40 season, with a 300 average.
Yeah, wow. I'm surprised I didn't know of this fellow, this gentleman, Mr. Taylor. So, but it looks like, it's not like they'll really need to lean on his offense. It's not like they're hurting for offense, even with Worth out and Span out. Because, I like Nate McCluth. He's not the best. He's not the worst. But Rendon, Harper, Zimmerman can get back to form if his shoulder's feeling better. Desmond, and then Wilson Ramos. I like that 2 through 7? 2 through 6, sorry.
2 through 6, yeah, because then you hit Yunel Escobar, which is meh. Yeah.
And when you're considering that you have two replacement players in that lineup, that's not bad. That looks better than the Giants lineup, honestly.
it looks much better than the Giants lineup, especially if, let's say Escobar doesn't work out. They already know that Danny Espinosa can play every day for them.
Yeah.
So that they're not hurting. They're just trying to see what they have, and it's those 2 through 6 that are so solid that they aren't worried about what happens with the rest of those guys. Anything else is just icing.
Yeah, because, if Worth comes back, which honestly I think Worth has a better chance to come back earlier than Span, just given the nature of their injuries and the timetables.
Well, and the nature of their games too. It's more likely that they can kind of, they're not going to be running Jason Worth, but they really need Denard Span to be able to run.
I mean, that's his game. That's what he's the new Juan Pierre.
Right.
Who retired, by the way, last week. So
good for him.
We can't make fun of Juan Pierre anymore.
That's right.
Although his parting shot was pretty good. He said on Twitter, something about, my only regret is that I retired with 18 career home runs. I thought I'd get to 20. If somebody wants to sign me, it should only take 3 more years. I thought that was pretty good.
Nice.
But all right, so that should wrap up the Nationals, I think. Move on to the next one, but really quick, we forgot to do this last podcast, and I think we already have our wager.
Yes.
For this podcast. 99.5 wins for the Washington Nationals. I'm taking the over.
Oh, this is a hot take.
Yeah, I am putting down. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. They're going to win 100 games this year.
Boy, oh, it's hard to go against that. I'm trying to look for something that could go wrong with their
team.
Nothing
can go wrong, Joe. They're going to win 162 games. I'll lock that in. No, I won't lock that in.
I guess Ryan Zimmerman. See, if Ryan Zimmerman were a little older, I could say he could just fall off the face of the earth. But even then, they'll just bump Ian Desmond up. So that's not a big deal.
Exactly. The team's bulletproof, Joe.
Yeah, it's good. But I will say that I'll take the under on that. Because I think they're just going to go for, 99.
Wow. Let's
say 98, 99.
Wow, you're skin of the teeth. You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing.
What am I doing?
You're hedging.
I am hedging my bets. That way I can say, I wasn't too far off. They got over 100, but only a couple games over.
Yeah, I was only 3 games off in the course of a season. What does that even matter? I was essentially right.
Right.
I see your game.
I'm just looking at this. Coming into this podcast, I was looking at this division, and it's just, because do we both agree that they're going to be the best team in the league? Probably.
Oh yeah.
Okay. It's just the rest of, they're the clear cut number one. But the rest of the division is so up in the air. Like, I have kind of what I think is an interesting take on who's going to end up number two. But we'll go in order. So we'll start with the Braves.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll go from last season. So last season, the Atlanta Braves, were 79-83. So that tells you the state of this, the NL East last year, that the winner had 96 wins and the second place team had 97. So it was never even really a contest.
Yeah, it was just the Nats beating up on them all year.
Yeah. They finished in second place, missed the playoffs. And Joe, what do you think? Successful or unsuccessful? They're in second. They're the second best team.
You know, I'm going to say that once again, and it really, this really has been a trend for a couple of years, they had an unsuccessful season last year. They finished below 500. They had some bright spots, some guys that, that did kind of well, but and certainly, you know, the development of Andrelton Simmons defensively has just been phenomenal. But to finish below 500, this is a Braves organization that dominated the 90s and early 1000s. You just can't expect your fan base to be pleased with a sub 500 record, especially with the amount of money they have soaked into some of these players.
Yeah, and I think actually, I obviously agree with you. I think that the phrase abject failure really applies here, because they had offseason acquisitions, they got the Uptons, they were poised to make a move. You know, Simmons was coming off, I think he had a pretty good offensive 2013, if I'm remembering correactly. So they were all ready to go. And then fast forward to 2015, and they blew it up. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, the year was so bad that B.J. Upton changed his name. I mean,
right. He just didn't even want to be associated with last year's team.
Yeah, he's like, oh, no, that was my other brother, B.J. My name's Melvin.
Keep in the attic. We don't. Yeah. He just comes out for one terrible 2014 season.
He's like the lost Upton brother, and he looks like Sloth from the Goonies. Like that's B.J. Upton. I'm Melvin.
Don't ask why we call him B.J.
Oh no. But here, I jotted this down to sort of underscore my point of how much they blew up the team. So the most starts by position last year, the lineup was Gattis, Freddie Freeman, Tommy La Stella, Andrelton Simmons, Chris Johnson, Justin Upton, B.J. Upton, and Jason Hayward. This year, there's Christian Betancourt at catcher. Freddie Freeman's the same. Then you've got Chris Johnson's the same, but then Alberto Callaspo, Johnny Gomes, Zoilo Almonte, and Nick Markakis are all different. For some reason, I skipped shortstop on this. So you can see that you've only got three guys that are the same from last year: Freeman, Chris Johnson, and Andrelton Simmons. So it was a blow-up of the offense in every sense of the word. And that even trickled down to the pitching staff, too, where Big Irv moved on to Kansas City.
Right.
And then wherever Mike Minor. Oh, he's on the DL. That's right. He's injured. I didn't see it in their pitching staff, and I was like, I could have sworn he was still on the Braves. But it's just gonna be bad. Just horrible. Their 2015 is just gonna be so bad, and that's really a testament to how bad their 2014 was, because they looked at the team that they put together. That was a relatively new team. It wasn't a team like the 2017 Tigers are gonna be, where they're reaching the end of their competitive cycle.
Yeah.
They were just put together, and then they were blown up. So that's how horribly bad the 2014 season went for them.
Yeah, you forgot about Aaron Harang too. They kicked him out of town.
Oh.
Probably not. Maybe the best move of the season for them. Yeah. the offseason. But
Zoilo Almonte.
Never heard of this guy, and he's only in there to replace Melvin Upton Jr. But really, gosh, they kept the wrong Upton, because I've never liked Melvin Upton Jr. BJ.
Just call him BJ.
I don't care. I'm just gonna call him. That's what he is.
It's not like Melvin's such a garbage name. It's not like when Mike Stanton became Giancarlo Stanton, because that's like an A+ name right there, Giancarlo.
Or like Meta World Peace. It's just not fun to say. It's just Melvin.
Yeah, Melvin. Like that's the Lost Upton brother. He's got like suspend. He's like Cliff
the Oracle of the
Yeah, but anyways, you were saying they kept the wrong Upton.
They kept the wrong Upton because we're talking with BJ now. He's 30 and a half. He's going to turn 31 this year, and it's just enough's enough. I think a lot of people last year were just all the biggest BJ Upton enthusiasts. He seems to have the longest leash of like any guy that never came to his full potential.
Yeah, he never really gets. You know, the same treatment as other players who never lived up to their potential. It's always like, oh, you know, one more year.
Yeah, it's not like he had injury issues. It's not like he was, like, missing a ton of games and couldn't piece it together. He just had long strings where, like, people were like, I can tell the potential's there, but he's just got to piece it together. And then his brother became so good that it was just a foregone conclusion. It almost bailed him out at that point when his brother broke onto the scene, because people were like, oh, well, if his brother's this good, then Upton has to have some talent. But it's just, yeah, he's just been terrible.
I mean, he's got no plate discipline. I'm looking at his stats. He's got no plate discipline. He's never hit above, okay, he hit 300 one year in 129 games. But after then, it was 273, 240, 237, 243. I mean, he's a career 240 hitter, 243 yeah, hitter. And he had I think a lot of it was buoyed by his fantasy value, because he had a lot of stolen bases. I mean, his last year with the Rays, he had 28 home runs and 31 stolen bases. That was sort of the year he put it all together. But yeah, since then, he's just sort of been, ugh. I mean, in 2013 and 2014, with the Braves, he's hit about 200 or less.
God.
It's just bad. And you know what? He keeps getting, you know, oh, he's a young guy. He hasn't been a young guy in a long time. He's 30 years old.
He's 30 and a half. He's going to be 31 this year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to believe that he's going to somehow retain, because it's fine to hit below 250 if you're Brian Dozier and you're putting up 20 or 30 seasons, but...
Or if you're you know, Andrelton Simmons and all your values in your glove.
Right.
You know, yeah, but he's not good defensively. He's not good offensively. In his 2 years in Atlanta, he's been negative 1.7 wins above replacement. So they could have called a random guy up from AAA and gotten an extra 1.7 wins in theory. And they're paying, and for the rights to do this, they've paid him $12.5 million in 2013. At 13.5 in 2014.
That's a joke, man. Bobby Cox is rolling over in his grave right now. He just would not have that on his team.
Is Bobby Cox dead? He's still alive, isn't he?
No, he's alive, but he was dead.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that's not... Hey, how about a hot take? Bobby Cox, 5.5 more years alive.
Wow.
Over, under.
I don't want to take that bet. That's scary. Because, like, if he dies tomorrow, am I like, yes,
He looked dead on the field, man, that last series, because he played against the Giants. I watched that series all the way. And that was his last game was against the Giants in, was that 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
A few years ago, yeah. And then Yeah, I think he and Chipper went out at the same time, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, yeah, that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I think that's – I always like when those longtime coaches and players go out together.
Oh, sorry about that. My puppy just got into the pizza.
Oh, okay. I was saying I love when those longtime players can go out together, like Bobby Cox and Chipper, and it's going to happen with Duncan and Pop in the NBA, and Brady and Belichick are going to go out together, I think. I always think that's a nice symmetry. You know, they come, they dominate, and they get out of town, and they ride off into the sunset together.
Yeah, I'd like to believe that, but Belichick just doesn't care enough. I think he's going to stick around forever. He's going to stick around until he just looks like the Emperor from Star Wars. Like well into his 80s, 90s.
I was going to say, so next year?
Right, like now.
Yeah, he kind of already looks like that. So, anyways, we've gotten off the Braves because they're a dumpster fire, and they're going to finish last in the division this year, I think it's pretty safe to say.
Boy, that would be nice. That would be nice for one of my other teams.
I was gonna say I forgot about the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll come back. It's the thing is it's like clearly this year it's clearly gonna be the Nationals in first. It's clearly gonna be the Marlins in second, and then it's
whoa,
just
hey,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yes, clearly Marlins in second.
We got to get onto our next team. Just real quick on the Braves though. Kind of like their pitching staff. I just want to give them credit for going out and doing the Jason Hayward for Shelby Miller trade. Because to me, if you can get a guy like Shelby Miller, a young arm, right about to enter his prime at a reasonable price, because I believe he's on a decent contract or still on his rookie contract, I say you do that every time. So I thought that was a really solid trade. It's not going to save their rotation because you still have Mike Minor, who just went down with an injury. But he just had rotator cuff inflammation. That's never good for a guy his age.
That's one of those things that might – he's going to rehab, come back, and it's going to become something bigger.
That's going to be a lingering goes. One. So it's not going to save him from the Eric Stoltz and their young rookie guy who's pitching fifth for them. But it was a nice move. It was an important move to make, and I definitely like that. They've got a nice young 1-2-3.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Unfortunately, they'll never be the best staff in the division.
Agreed.
All right, on to the next one. So the third place team in 2014 were the New York Mets. They were also 79 and 83, and they are very bad. I do not like the Mets at all. But
what?
I do not like the Mets at all, except their pitching staff's going to be awesome.
Their pitching staff's going to be amazing.
Their pitching staff's going to be amazing, but, Joe, they're going to trot out Daniel Murphy, Juan Lagares, Lucas Duda, the Coors of Curtis Granderson.
Let's
the focus. Coors Field Mirage that is Michael Kadir.
Let's focus on the pitching staff, all right? And for whatever reason, I mean, we're both looking at roster resource, but somebody needs to fix this thing because there's no way a 42-year-old Bartolo Colon is going to be their ace on opening day.
If
Matt Harvey comes back and continues to do well in spring, which from everything I've heard, he's hitting like high 90s on the gun, and is locating and just looks phenomenal. He's going to be their opening day starter. Second in line is either going to be Nice or Wheeler, and then they've got Wheeler or Nice or DeGrom coming next. Either one of the whoever's left over from that is going to come ahead of DeGrom. So I'm looking at the pitching staff. If Harvey comes back as good as he was before his injury, Wheeler takes another step forward. Remember, he's only going to be 25 this year. DeGrom just sustains what he did last year, and Nice does what he's done now for years. We're looking at a staff that could potentially and they still have Dylan Gee, who's kind of like their Tanner Roark that they can go back and plug in and have a decent end-of-the-rotation guy. You're looking at least the second best pitching staff in the division, and
at least, Joe.
At very least.
So you're saying that they could challenge the Nationals, who have what might be an all-time staff.
Okay, I'm gonna say
maybe in 2016.
No, I'm gonna say now because if you look at the ERAs last year, the Mets did, or just at the overall pitching team stats, the Mets did very well. They were the ninth in the division. They had a 3.49 ERA, and this is without Matt Harvey that they pulled this off. Without Matt Harvey, they had a 3.49 ERA. Their top two prospects are, and I know I'm getting into prospects a little early in this conversation, but their top two prospects are the number 11 prospect in Noah Syndergaard, who, by all estimations, is going to be a top of the rotation starter. He had a meh year last year in Las Vegas. He went for a 4.60 ERA. with 145 K to 43 walk K to walk ratio. But a decent whip, 148, that's not terrible. He's supposed to be expected to come up next year. So if he hits his stride going into New York, that's not an easy ballpark to hit in. We could see some major success from Syndergaard. And their next best prospect is also a pitcher named Steven Matz, who is listed on their roster right now. His year last year, he was in Double A, and he hit he was at a 2.27 ERA. Or no, last year in the minors, through two levels, had a 2.24 ERA. 131 to 35 K to walk, and 140 innings pitched. So these are two top. Matz was in the top 10 left-handed pitching prospects. He was number 8, according to the MLB, which is done by Keith Law. I mean, if one of these two guys comes up and makes it, then they don't have to worry about a Bartolo Colon collapse. They've got a starting rotation that absolutely can go toe-to-toe with Washington.
Wow. I don't...
It's there to be had.
Yes, if everybody in the Nationals rotation performs at, say, like the bottom 10% of what they can do, and everybody in the Mets rotation performs at the top 10% of what they can do, yes, I could see a world where that happens. But I don't think that world occurs in 2015, at least in this universe.
Let me ask a question. If Matt Harvey goes back to what he was, is he the best pitcher in this division?
Absolutely not.
Are you going to say Jose Fernandez? Because we forget. We think Jose Fernandez is a great pitcher, but Matt Harvey was Jose Fernandez before Jose Fernandez.
No, I'm not talking about Jose Fernandez. I'm talking about, I don't know, pick a guy from the Nationals.
Strasburg? He's better than Strasburg.
Mm. Scherzer. I don't know about that, Joburg.
I mean, Matt Harvey was the king of pitchers 2 years ago. He was like putting together a season that people were just going gaga over. And it was just 2 years ago. And he's only 26 years old. I mean, he's entering his prime right now. Everything I've heard has been positive about him. If he goes back to what he was, I love this rotation. I love it.
I mean, I get what you're saying about, excuse me, I get what you're saying about Matt Harvey, but I mean, the guy's been out of the game a while, and hold on, I'm just checking something really quick here. While I'm looking this up, we'll come back to this Matt Harvey discussion, but is there anything else you want to talk about on the Mets other than the Matt Harvey show?
Yes, because I do kind of want to pitch a little. I looked at the batting order, and I kind of had the initial queasy feeling that I think you had. But really, if you look at it a little deeper, these are a lot of names that not a lot of people outside of New York know. And the one name that everybody does know, which is David Wright, is no longer David Wright. I mean, we were talking about who were we talking about just a little while ago? Who we said is likely washed up. Anyway, I mean, David Wright is on par with the veterans that may never come back to what. The Miguel Cabrera. We were talking about Miguel Cabrera and how this could be kind of like the beginning of his end. David Wright hit that last year. Like he is not coming back after a season where he hit, you know, sub 250 with 8 home runs, 8 stolen bases. It was just a disaster year for him.
Yeah, I was. What's funny is you were saying that. I was like, Prince Fielder? I was like, is that who we were talking about? Because I remember we talked about that. We haven't done an AL West yet, but yeah, I think Wright, this is sort of the end. This is, if you're thinking about chapters in a player's career, David Wright's starting to hit. If he's not in the last chapter, he's in the second to last chapter. This is the last couple of years before they make that move where he goes over to first, and then he quietly does the David Wright retirement tour and then rides off into the sunset, which honestly he's earned. He was one of the best players in baseball for quite a few years.
He was, and he was never supposed to be that great. I mean, he was a good prospect, but he was never supposed to be a great prospect.
Yeah.
Who developed into just one of the better hitters in the league. And one of the most recognizable faces in baseball.
Yeah, he really was. He became, like, if he'd kept it up, or if Jeter had retired a couple years earlier, I think he may have been, because of the New York exposure, he could have become, like, the Mr. Baseball. The face of baseball. Buster Posey won a couple weeks ago. Like, he could have been the face of baseball because he's got that all the ladies love him. He's got the looks and all that stuff. But he's just gotten old very fast. And yeah. I was going to make some point, by the way, about Matt Harvey versus the other pitchers. And oddly enough, the one who actually compared best to Matt Harvey was Jordan Zimmermann. He might quietly be the best pitcher on that staff.
Jordan Zimmermann. I was just going to say that we didn't really touch on the Nationals pitchers individually, but Jordan Zimmermann is kind of the guy who gets overshadowed, always was too, with Gio Gonzalez and everything, but really could end up being the best pitcher on that staff. But yeah. I think Matt Harvey's better than Jordan Zimmermann. Matt Harvey was the best pitcher in baseball 2 years ago.
That's entirely true, but I think you did couch it with if he does go back to what he was. Yes, if he does go back to what he was, he's much better than what the Nationals have because he was so good. But yeah. I mean, there's the whole recovery from Tommy John thing. Granted, the Mets did the smart thing. They took their time with him. But you got to kind of wonder if they sold off a couple of what might be the best – well, if they lost what might be some of the best years of his career because of this Tommy John surgery, if they were sort of robbed of that.
Maybe, but, you know, with Tommy John, it's a 50-50 thing, and you either get a guy who ends up like Mark Pryor and has a ton of them and never does well, or you have a guy who comes back stronger, and that's certainly been the case more and more recently, that the guys getting Tommy John surgery are coming back and throwing even harder. And he's still 26. I mean, he's entering his physical peak, so I just see Matt Harvey as a no-brainer bounce-back candidate this year.
That's a safe bet, I think. So. All right, well, I
want to look – no, wait. I want to look one more time at the – I'm sorry. So I said David Wright, he's out. He's going to be out of the league soon. With Lucas Duda, yes, he hit 220, 225 or whatever. We're still talking about a guy who hit 30 home runs. Daniel Murphy had a solid all-around season last year and became a serviceable player, hit near 300, hit, you know, a handful of home runs, 15 or so. Kind of like a Martin Prado type. Juan Lagares, you know, he's only 26 years old. He's going to be 27 this year, or he just turned 26. But he's only been in the league for 2 years, and in 2013 hit .242 batting average, with a .281 OBP, not that great, and 390 for the bats.
.282 OBP?
.281 OBP. So that was his first year in the league, though. Okay, 20.
Oh, okay.
Give him a little breathing room, right? And he only played 392 at-bats because it's the Mets, and they needed him to play that much. 2014, he ups that from a .242 batting average to .281 batting average and a .321 OBP. So now we're starting to talk about a guy who could lead off for a team. He upped his stolen bases from 6 to 13. His home runs stayed the same at 4 because, you know, that's the kind of park that you're not going to hit a ton of home runs in unless you're Carlos Delgado. He won the Golden Glove last year as a center fielder. So I'm looking at their roster, and the guys they have that are young, defensive-minded guys with a lot of potential, Juan Lagares, Wilmer Flores, who I love. I mean, I still think he's going to – he's only 23 and a half. He's going to develop over the next few years. Juan Lagares, Wilmer Flores, Travis d'Arnaud. All of these are defensive-minded players right up the middle of the field. That is going to only benefit their pitching staff that much more. And Michael Kadire, who you kind of crapped on, he's 36, I get it, but for the last 2 years he's hit 330. How much of that has to do with Colorado? I don't know.
That's why I called him the Mirage of Coors Field.
Right. I could see that, but you know, even if he goes down and hits 300, if he loses 30 points off his batting average, he's still going to be a serviceable number five, and he's going to see a ton of pitches behind Lucas Duda.
Yeah. So I just pulled up his home road splits. So in 2014, mm-hmm. he hit 282 on the road and 400 at home. In 2013, it was more even. He hit 311 away from Coors. 2012, he hit 250, but I don't think he was on the Rockies in 2012. So I think he's a Coors. I honestly believe he's a Coors Field Mirage, and I think he's gonna come down lower than 300. I mean, he's gonna lose more than the 40 points of batting average because he got so much from the Coors effect. I mean, he hit 400 at Coors. He was like the poster child for the home road split.
But it's not like Michael Kadire was a terrible hitter before he got to Coors. He was always the guy who hit 300 or higher. I mean, that was his calling card was his batting average.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he with the Twins, I mean, he may replicate it, but I mean, he's just old. I mean, skills fade. It's just one of the things that happens.
Yeah, but hitting doesn't. I mean, I could see the power taking a major dip and maybe even disappearing entirely, but he's going to hit for average. I'm fairly certain that's going to happen.
I think I have a stat that will help you change your mind. I just pulled up his Fangraphs page. In 2013, he had a 382 BABIP. In 2014, he had a 351 BABIP. Before then, he was pretty much a career 300 BABIP guy. So It may be the Coors effect, not that the balls are traveling further, but it's that because the balls travel further in Coors, outfielders tend to play back, and right. So you can sort of drop hits then. I think that might be what it is with him. So,
yeah. I mean, I could see that, but I just think, you know, don't close the book on a guy who hit 330 last year. It's just it's too soon.
Joe, I will close whatever book I want.
And as we said before, Curtis Granderson is terrible. So
he's very bad, but I think he's going to have a spike in home runs this year. He had 20 last year. He could get up to 25 because they're actually bringing in the fences, I believe, in right center. And I saw a chart on the ESPN home run tracker that was they used that as an overlay. Where I think he was going to hit. It was like three or four more home runs would have gone out of in the new dimensions. He hit like all his home runs to like that spot. It's like they brought the wall in to be like, all right, we got to justify Curtis Granderson. Bring the wall in, so he can get more dingers. But I think he'll have a spike in home runs. But he's just
good for him. I mean, he's 34, so.
Yeah, but I don't. I'm not going to attribute the spike to anything that he's doing or any of his skills. It's because they're literally building the ballpark to suit what he did last year.
Right.
So, all right. Speaking of closing books, anything else you want to talk about with the Mets?
No.
Okay. We got two more teams in the division, but before we get to them.
Oh wait, can I just say about the Mets? I do think they're going to finish second.
Do you think they're going to finish second?
Yeah, and to me, it's a no-brainer. I really do. I put my money on it, so maybe we can get a little bet in at the end.
Oh, my God. I have to think more about that. I have to figure out how much I believe in the Marlins. But
well, let's talk about the Marlins, Jeffrey.
Wait. Before then, you told me that there was something you want to talk about with there's some new rules that are being put into place by baseball for speed of the game. And you told me that you wanted to talk about those. So is this when you want to talk about them?
Sure. Yeah, we can take a little hiatus in the middle here. So I was watching very lovely program called PBS NewsHour, which is the only place I get my news anymore. And they did a little segment. You know, they tend to focus on more serious issues like ISIS and the upcoming political race and just all sorts of stuff that don't have to do with other things that I love more. But they ended up talking about baseball and their shift to some new rules that they're going to introduce this year. One of them is just really an enforcement of the old time in the batter's box, not being able to step out of the batter's box when you're locked in and not being able to take time out, which hasn't been followed well in the last few years and has led to games being much longer and just at-bats as well being much longer than they should be. And you have some weird, especially in the last few years, something I've really never liked, which has been when a batter steps out or calls time out at the last minute and you have a pitcher already throwing the pitch. And so, but for whatever reason, the umpire will just come in and wave it off, and there you have an extra pitch. I mean, granted, it's only one pitch, but you got a guy who just gave his all and just gave away his whatever knockout pitch he was going to give or a two-strike pitch or whatever. He just gave that to the other team, and now he's got to figure out something else. So I've never liked that rule wasn't being closely enforced. And I like that they're going to introduce that this year. And then the other, or reinforce that this year. And then the other thing that they're going to reinforce, or they're introducing, actually, I believe, is it's a pitching rule. Can you elaborate on that? I'm forgetting kind of what it was.
The pitching rule, the one that I know about is the timer.
Bring back the clock. Yeah, that's
yeah, the timer. Yeah, pitch. There was some guys who were just railing against it. I think it was John Lester who was talking about how, oh, well, that's the beauty of baseball is there's no clock, there's no timer. It's the only sport where, you know, it takes as long as it takes. And it's like, well, yes, that's not the beauty of baseball. It's not that there's not a timer. Personally, I would love if there was a timer. I'm sick and tired of guys like Pablo Sandoval taking this ridiculous time between at-bats, and then pitchers, you know, taking their walk around the mound, grabbing the rosin bag, you know, playing with it, you know, rubbing the ball, and snot rocket. Just these ridiculous long routines between pitches. It's like, just pitch the ball. Get the ball, pitch the ball, like Mark Burley.
I definitely agree, and I, like I said, I really do appreciate that they're going to enforce the batter's box thing. I tend to shift a little more toward the John Lester side of this because I'm thinking about AR pitchers that take just an incredible amount of time to pitch a ball sometimes, the Giants pitchers, so there's a little bit of selfishness, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, if there's a clock out there and you do have notoriously slower pitchers, in this game where, you know, we've shifted away from hitting home runs and a lot more teams are attempting to steal bases and run on the opposing pitcher and play small ball, you have a real issue if there's a timer going off because they can wait until the very last, if they know they're facing a slow pitcher who doesn't have a great move to the first base side, they can just run on it at the very end when it's reaching the last few seconds, and all of a sudden you've got a real pickle for the pitcher who has to figure out if he can... he might just have to throw home just by default at that point.
No, you know what? I honestly hadn't thought of that ramification. That's a real thing. And then that might lead to a... sort of a preemptive, you know, if it's a 25-second clock right now?
Yeah.
Where pitchers have run in their head mentally a 20-second clock to undo that. Sort of like how in football, you have teams that like to get to the line with, like, 15 seconds left on the play clock so that they can then make those adjustments because rather than running up there with 10 seconds left and pretty much having no chance to adjust to anything, you may have had pitchers preemptively going to a 20-second. And ultimately, that gets done what they want to get done, which is to speed up the pace of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the ultimate point. To me, you know, I as a baseball enthusiast and a purist, I can't say that I'm overly concerned with how long these games are, because I do kind of like being able to sit down, zone out. Even for a guy like me who just will hang on every pitch most of the time, there's sometimes I just kind of like to check out when they're just, you know, doing their thing and relax for 3.5 hours, which, by the way, is the average, I believe, now is 3.5 hours or 3 hours of these games, which is why these things are being introduced. But I just, you know, for the non... This seems to be a move more for the non-baseball fans, to attract people in more than to appease people who are already watching.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely it. It's to pull in people because people, oh, baseball is so boring. Like, you hear that so much. And they think that speeding up the pace of the game will bring in new people.
No, it still doesn't have as much excitement as these other sports.
Well, yeah, but that's not what it's about. It's not about football. It's just 16 games, you know, hitting each other. It's about you know, these are your guys day in, day out. You know, you can watch a game every day, and like you said, you can zone out and relax. I honestly don't know if I can remember a time that I remember like the third, fourth, and fifth innings of a baseball game that I was at live, because you just sort of zone out for a little bit and then come back to it. And
we're up 3 runs.
Yeah. With the games that I've been to, it's like, oh my God, we're down 5 runs. What happened? But I agree. And what you mentioned, you know, trying to bring in more fans. And I think that all these rules that you're talking about to speed up the game, those are not nearly as dangerous, and you mentioned you're a purist too, as Rob Manfred, the new commissioner, he wants to eliminate the shift.
Yeah, that's silly.
That's silly. I mean, that's one of the things about baseball is you have a pitcher, a catcher, and 7 fielders. You can put those 7 fielders however you want. We all agreed on this one thing, but, you know, obviously, first base wants to be at first, second, second, third, third. But, I mean, shortstop's not an actual position. You don't have to be there. You should be there.
Right.
And I just think that of all the new rules and stuff that Manfred's talking about, I think that the pace of games ones aren't nearly as bad as the eliminating shifts. I think that's just meddling for the sake of meddling.
I agree. And that's really, yeah, that's just a guy trying to make a historic claim to some change in the game. And if there's one thing about baseball purists, true purists, do not enjoy changes to the game. I mean, you're talking about a team that, or a league that has fought up until last year instant replay, and still doesn't have, despite the fact that they broadcast with a K-zone, they still haven't brought that into the mix. So they're still running off the umpires. But the one thing I really don't like about the rule you just mentioned, this eliminating the shifts thing, is what are we paying managers for then? Like, really, like, this is not a coach, like a basketball coach or a football coach, where you're drawing up plays. This is not a sport where you draw up plays. That's the closest thing they have to drawing up plays. So.
Yeah, no, that's very true, because, I mean, what do they do? If you get rid of, like, shifts, all they're doing is they're stepping in for, you know, if they want a particular pitch called, and they manage when the players get shifted, and that, or substituted. And that's
double
it.
Switches.
I think that's
double switches. They'll do at that point once they hit the shift.
Yeah, I know when Bochy jogs out, you know, touches his right arm, it really gets my blood going, though, because it's like... Yeah, look at that! Look at that guy churn his arms like a little choo-choo train. But
yeah, that's what we're paying him $5 million a year to do, is just come out of the bullpen, touch his arm.
Yeah, the shift thing, I called it in a blog post I made. I called it dangerous and willfully dense, because that's what it is. It's like it sets this bad precedent where it's like, well, this changes scoring negatively, so I want to get rid of it. It changes the arms race, the natural arms race between pitchers and hitters. back to the negative. And I think maybe now that we're talking it through, the pitch clock may do the same thing, but in the opposite direction. It gives the off, well, actually no, the same direction. It gives the offense another leg up.
Well, it's nurturing. It's nurturing a different stat. The other stat that remains after exiting the steroid era, which is stolen bases. It's making it easier for teams to score a lot of runs with small ball. It's nurturing a new crop of speed-based players like Billy Hamilton and Byron Buxton whenever he makes it up. So it's adding excitement. It's all about adding excitement to the game and increasing stats. And I don't like what it implies for teams that are trying to build their rosters the right way, which is around the pitching staff.
Yeah, it's almost saying, all right, pitchers, you're second-class citizens.
Yeah, despite the fact they've been the lifeblood of the game since it was invented.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, that was a nice little digression, but we're starting to go long. So speaking of things that are second, talking about your 2015 second-place NL East Miami Marlins.
Third.
Nah, second. And I don't know what happened to my list of records from last year. Joburg, do you have that up?
Their team from last year? Or their record?
Yeah, their record from last year.
Their record last year was 77-85.
So that was good for fourth place.
Yeah, two less wins. It was good for fourth place, yeah. Two less wins than the Braves and the Mets shared. But fourth place, kind of clustered at the bottom there. And like I said, anyone could kind of make a move up, and I certainly think that Miami getting Jose Fernandez back, because they didn't have him all last year. But getting him back will certainly help them, I believe, hit the 80-win plateau and maybe go a little higher.
I think 80, somewhere between 80 and 85 is a safe bet for them. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're gonna have a good run at it, I think. But I like their acquisition of Michael Morse, if he can stay healthy, play first. He's a snap up from, was it Travis Snyder they had last year? No.
Who knows? Gabby Sanchez.
Yeah, he's a step up there. I like Marcelo Ozuna. I like Christian Yelich. He should be in for a big year. And then Giancarlo Stanton. I just think, talking about second place in this division, I think you put it perfectly that any team could step up. It's very clear that the Nationals are the cream of the crop by far. I think it's just personal preference. You really like the Mets for their pitching staff. I think that we disagreed on that the Mets hitters. I think you have more faith in them than I do, and I can concede that I'm wrong, but I don't have a lot of faith in their hitters. This is kind of the opposite. I have more faith in the Marlins hitters, but their pitching staff still has some talent. If Fernandez comes back sooner rather than later, you've got Fernandez, Latos, who is 27, so that's when he should be due for a bounce back. Jared Cozart, Henderson Alvarez, and then old man Dan Heron.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a solid but not spectacular rotation.
It really isn't. I think it's top heavy.
Yeah, and unlike the Mets rotation, it doesn't have a lot of chance to get better than what it actually is. I mean, I like Henderson Alvarez to be a potential, to build on what he did last year. And then Jose Fernandez is all one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Okay.
But I think the difference is that these pitchers are what they are, whereas Harvey, Wheeler,
DeGrom,
those are all guys that are poised to take the next step. And I think the difference in our evaluation is you think that they're going to take that step this year. I'm hedging it and thinking that it's going to be next year. I think that's the difference. That in 2016, they're going to get Colon out of the rotation. They're going to get either G or Syndergaard in, and that'll shore up that rotation.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, I don't know why I just spent over a minute talking about the Mets on the Marlins.
I don't know. You obviously don't like this team as much as you think. No. Where do we stand on? So, I've kind of been going back and forth. I've been looking at this roster. What do I think about it? I'm constantly left with this I don't know feeling. And I think that's what's keeping me from really committing to this team. I think they're obviously good enough to outdo the Braves, which we talked about is just a dumpster fire team. The guy that I think just symbolizes perfectly what I feel about this team is Dee Gordon, their acquisition last season or on the offseason, who I've loved since I heard about him coming up. His family obviously has a lot of talent. His younger brother is in the Twins system and is believed to be their shortstop of the future. His father was a great setup guy, you know, fill-in closer for the Yankees and Phillies. But I don't know what to think about the guy. He's going to be 27 this year. He showed otherworldly speed, but an inconsistent ability to get on base.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if he's even if he even should be their leadoff guy next year. Like, Christian Yelich did a really good job, and they've bumped him to the two hole for the sake of Dee Gordon, and I just don't know if that's the correct decision for them.
But Yelich is such a good blunter, though.
Right.
No, I agree with your assessment of Dee Gordon. I think it was a bad move to get him. Notice when I was talking about the acquisitions, I left out Dee Gordon. That wasn't because I forgot about him. It's because I have no faith in Dee Gordon. Mm. I'm trying to find his first half, second half splits from last year because there was if I'm remembering correctly, there was a stark drop-off after the All-Star game last year.
Well, he surged. First half of the season, he was looking like he had his breakout year.
Yeah, so we're looking at first half, 292 batting average with a 344 OBP, which is really good.
Yeah.
And then that OBP dropped to 300 after the All-Star break. And he's got a sub-400 slugging, so he doesn't bring much else, and that's all doubles. And so he doesn't bring much else to the table outside of his speed. I mean, his slugging's all in his doubles, which is all speed. His value is inherently tied up in his stolen bases. And if he's not getting on base, if he's a 300 OBP guy, like he was the second half of last season, then he has possibly negative value in that pitching lineup or that hitting lineup, especially in the number one slot.
Yeah, I mean, any success is really predicated on him piecing it all together, which he certainly could do at age 27. It's been done before, but it's not like he's coming from a lineup of slouches where he was getting, you know, he wasn't seeing pitches. He was seeing pitches, and he was failing to make contact.
Yeah, it was just him flailing. I don't know a better way to put it. Let's look at his plate discipline numbers. Let's see, 2014. His contact rate went down. His zone contact.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I have no faith in Dee Gordon. It sounds like we're on the same page with that.
It's not that I have no faith in him, because I really have liked him for a long time. I'm not 100% sure he's going to be a great leadoff guy for him, and if he's not, then they've got to go to Yelich, which means they've got to find a two-hole hitter. They'll probably plug in Prado, who actually is a very good bunter. then they have Giancarlo Stanton and Morse, and they really have to hope for a repeat year from Morse and nothing after that. I mean, maybe you could make a case for Ozuna being a nice semi-breakout hitter last year with the 265 or whatever. Let me see. 269 average last year, 23 home runs, 317 OBP, but 41 walks to 164 strikeouts. He's only 24, but, you know, 23 is not outstanding. It's just what it is. He would have to take a major leap to be able to fill any kind of five hole that would be left over in that scenario.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, really, I think with the Marlins, there's not a whole lot to talk about. I'm looking here. They're pretty underwhelming outside of, you know, Jose Fernandez and the guys we already talked about. So,
not a terrible bullpen, by the way. Very, very well constructed. Solid lefty-righty mix. Steve Cishek is a good closer. Good pitcher to be a closer. Aaron Crow was a big pickup from KC. And he's been very good the last few years. Mike Dunn, good pitcher. Brad Hand's been good. There's just a lot of success, and all of those guys are under 30, so you don't have to worry about any sudden drop off.
Yeah, I think that what I was saying about the offense and the starting pitchers could apply to the relief pitchers too. They're all solid, but they sort of are what they are. None of them have a ton of potential, but they're all good to solid. There's not like a Joe Nathan in there. Sorry, that's the second Joe Nathan burn, but he's just so bad now. All right. So, anything else you want to say about the Marlins before we move on?
I don't. They don't even really have any prospects because of the, you know, a couple of years ago they just traded everything.
Yeah, they cleaned house
to make a super team, and now they're left with none of those players.
Yeah, so, all right, Joe, Philadelphia Phillies, 73-89, go.
Oh, talking about teams that have a shot at number two. I mean, every team in this division has a shot, right? That's what we said.
No.
Philadelphia Phillies, what was their record? I almost hesitated.
Garbage and garbage, 73-89.
0-0, they didn't even let him play. Yeah. They couldn't roster a team. I don't know what this is. I mean, I'm looking at this team, and I went on the Phillies blog just to kind of, because I was so confused by just looking at their roster, what's going on here. I decided to go on their blog, and they're talking up guys like Cody Ashe and what was the other one? It was Cody Ashe and Freddie Galvis. That was their two.
Ugh.
They were just stoked about their end of the lineup hitters that have never been anything.
They're rolling up the hype train for those guys.
Oof! Just because they want to keep as much attention away from the top of their lineup, understandably. I mean, Ben Revere is probably the most promising. Carlos Ruiz and Ben Revere are the two most promising players. Ben Revere will be 27, an adequate leadoff hitter, but has never been anything special and was supposed to be such a faster player than he ended up being. Just never really had eye-popping steals numbers, just kind of adequate steals numbers. Let me see. Let me see if I can even find it. Okay, so the last 3 years... Oh, well, let's see. He had 49 steals last year. That's not bad. Yeah. That's certainly better than adequate, I would say. But 22 steals in 2013, which was meh, and then 40 the year before. So he's a stolen base machine who can hit 300. That's a very good leadoff hitter. But you got to have guys behind him to get him in. And Carlos Ruiz is going to be 36 this year. Some say he's the best a top five catcher, but he's 36. So
I had no idea Cheech was 36.
He's 36.
Oh my God! I pegged him for 29, 30. I had no idea that Cheech Ruiz was 36 years old. This team is hot garbage.
Yeah. And then, gosh, you know, go down the line, you got. Next up, Chase Utley, who's already having problems this year, by the way. He's already decided he's got some elbow inflammation or whatever, and they're a little worried it's some nerve damage or whatever. He's 36 this year, hasn't had a productive season, a full season in a few years. Ryan Howard, 35. Can I say just really quickly? Something about Ryan Howard.
Joe, you can have all the floor you want for Ryan Howard.
Okay, I'm not going to let people completely crap on Ryan Howard. he's obviously taken a drop off. He's 35 this year. The last time he hit over 30 home runs was in 2011. In 2012, he didn't. But in 2012, 2013, you can combine those 2 years, and he hit 25, not over 30.
I don't think annual statistics work that way, Joe.
They don't work like that? They don't project that way?
No.
So really not great. And then last year came in and played a full season and hit 23 home runs. Is still just eye-popping with the strikeout numbers. His batting average has rescinded every year. He's not a gold glove first baseman. He at this point in his career, is probably a middle to low-end DH. But for some reason, he's batting fourth and playing first for the Phillies. Not some reason. I mean, they can't get rid of him. He's got an albatross contract.
Yeah, they own 50 mil over the next 2 years. I was just looking that up.
That's amazing to me. I mean, how they still give out these contracts to guys is baffling to me.
Well, it looks like he got his big contract a while ago, but I mean, pretty much everybody except for Ruben Amaro Jr. knew that was a terrible contract. And even I'm sure deep down Ryan Howard was like, okay, because
I mean, what's he gonna do? You know, he's got to take the money. He's not making that much doing Subway ads. He's got to generate some revenue for himself, and he's gonna take the contract, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's just incredible. But good news for the Phillies. It's only gonna cost them $10 million to tell him to buzz off in 2017.
No, that's good.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. But by the time, by the time his career is over.
I mean, by the time that happens, we'll be ready to the Giants will be ready to give him a 3-year deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's that key Brian Sabian market inefficiency, the age 38, 39, 40 seasons. That's when you really get the production.
Yeah, it's get the bang for the buck.
Yeah, but by the time he's done, he will, assuming that they buy him out in 2017, he will have made $190 million.
Wow.
Yeah, and for the last, 4 years, he's just been garbage. So,
good for him, you know. A certain point, he was the best power hitter in baseball.
I can't disagree with that. Well,
good for him for cashing in. He was better than Pujols. Pujols had the average. Ryan Howard had the home runs on him.
I stopped myself. Pujols was the better overall hitter, but he was the better power hitter.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a guy who hit, what was it, 50 home runs? I don't have it up right now. I'm not going to cream over Ryan Howard for the next 10 minutes, but he had, 58 home runs? I mean, he was putting up the best home run seasons we'd seen since the Bonds, Sosa, McGuire races.
Yeah, he put up just about 50 over a four-year span. He had 58, 47, 48, and 45. So that 58 pulls that average up to probably about 49, 50. So,
I mean, before he dropped off a cliff, he had the best home run rate in the history of baseball. Starting from when he came in. It was the best home run rate in the history of baseball. I mean, it was something, but whatever.
Yeah, he was really good. No, Joe, I was there. I was there in our apartment. Ryan Howard guy, he's so good. I'm like, eh. You're like, he's so good. Listen to me. I'm like, eh. But you were right. He was very good for a long time. And now he's not, so I get the last laugh.
Oh, no. You know who else isn't good, and he's only 28, is Dominic Brown. And he will be batting fifth for them. He hit... I mean, it looked like he was kind of on his way up in 2013. He had a decent season, 272 batting average, 324 OBP, 27 home runs with 8 stolen bases. It's not terrible, right? Like, that looks like that's the beginning of a potential breakout. 2014, same amount of at-bats almost, hit 10 home runs and 7 stolen bases and 235 batting average and 285 OBP. Not good.
Yeah, not good. That's just that's what not getting better looks like.
Yeah, you can't have your sophomore slump in your fourth year.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works.
Now can we, after Dominic Brown hitting sixth, possibly the greatest all-around baseball player to ever play the game.
Yeah, while I was going nuts over Ryan Howard, I mean, this is the guy that you were all about.
I love those years. Grady Sizemore. That was back, Grady, that was, I was all about Grady Sizemore, Chase Utley. I mean, I always poo-pooed the Phillies, but secretly I was always about him because of Chase Utley, but, but I mean, when Grady Sizemore is your number six hitter, he'll be 33, a 33-year-old Grady Sizemore, who has had, I think, roughly 6 million surgical procedures on his knees.
He's the Mark Pryor of hitters. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, he has the body of like an 85-year-old, below the waist, and it's sad that his career was cut so short. And it's good to see him get, you know, another chance, but. Oof! He should not be a starter for your team. Not in any sense of the word.
He should not be a baseball player. It's pretty amazing. No, he still is.
Yeah, he was out of baseball in 2012, 2000, and 2013. And before then, he only played 104 games combined between 2010 and 2011. So he wasn't a baseball player for a long time, and now he is the starting left fielder for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Fascinating that they think that they can hide him back there. That's going to be a show. I mean, him and then Dom Brown in right field, who's still trying to get his defense figured out. Ben Revere, who's a very good defensive center fielder, but it's just going to be a disaster for them.
It's going to be very bad, so. Speaking of players that were not baseball players for a while, Joe, can you do me a favor, scroll down on Roster Resource to their pitching staff and tell me who their number four pitcher is?
I don't know who their number four pitcher is. I know their number two pitcher is Jerome Williams.
Oh, I see what you did there. This team is full of like ex-Jeff and Joe players.
It's like, amazing. It's like they delved into just transcripts of our 2006 discussions, and they decided to build a roster off of it.
Maybe that's
Jonathan
that's
Papel. They have Papelbon. We forgot that.
Yeah, they have Jonathan Papelbon. It's like Ruben Amaro heard all the bad stuff we were saying about him and was like, no, I have to get them back. I have to get all these players. I have to get Jerome Williams and Grady Sizemore. This will be perfect. That'll show Jeff and Joe.
And they have Cliff Lee.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Mr. Lee. And Chad Billingsley, who I used to be all about, too. Like, this team, in theory, should be great 5 years ago.
Ten. you're being gracious. This is like 8 years ago, team.
Yeah, and I'm talking like with this lineup, like a 19-year-old Cody Ashe. Like, why not? Sure.
Sure, throw him in there.
Yeah, why not? But yeah, this team. It's like Ruben Amaro Jr. was looking at scouting reports from 2010 when he put this team together, or 2009. It's just so old and so bad, and they have no chance of contending. They have no chance. They're going nowhere. They need to blow it up. While you're talking, I was pulling up a chart because I wanted to make sure the terms were correct. SB Nation posted a chart of all the teams, and it's a two axis. So vertical is age. So it's between hella old and lots of talent. Okay. And horizontal is nope, like they're garbage and should contend.
Okay.
And the chart said, is your team young and rebuilding, a contender, or the Phillies? Because the Phillies are like the only team that's in the nope and hella old square, and it's them and the Reds, but they're way far away from contending. Like they had to like make the chart a little bit bigger just to fit the Phillies, and they're still only half on the screen. Like they're just so bad and so old, it's mind-boggling.
It's just an amazing thing. I mean, when you have a team, they've been bad. I mean, we forget that they were arguably the Nationals of 2010 when the Giants played them in the World Series. Like that, we played them and we beat them, but we were not supposed to beat them. And they were the best team in baseball. They had this, you know, all-time pitching staff. Remember, that's the words we used with Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels. Can't remember the fourth guy, but it was 1 through 5. They were just insanely dominant. Here we are over 5 years later. We're only 5 years, 4 years later, and we're looking at just – they haven't been good now for 4 years.
No, they haven't. they haven't been good since then. And by the way, in 2010, it was Mr. Roy Oswalt.
Oh, Royals.
A guy who I was also all about for a long time. But yeah, the Phillies, I think we may have bashed on them enough, but they're just, there's not a lot there. There's like one decent player, Cole Hamels, and he's going to be traded at the trade deadline.
But why hasn't he been traded yet? I mean, it's just, it's an amazing thing that Cole Hamels is still on this team. What are they doing? They're letting Cole Hamels, he's going to be 31. He is 31 this year. So he's entering an age where every year they spend, they're not going to get as much as they could have the year before for him. Kevin Slowey, so they go out and instead of, you know, trading a guy like Cole Hamels, they didn't trade Chase Utley again. He's going to be worth nothing. He actually has a tradable contract. And they go out and they sign guys like Grady Sizemore, who's 32 and a half. They sign a guy like Aaron Harang, who's going to be 37 this year. They sign a guy like Kevin Slowey, who's 31. What are they doing? Why are they signing old players when they should be nurturing their young guys and hoping to find something?
Yeah, I think they might be a little bit gun shy from when they traded Cliff Lee the first time. Remember when they traded him to the Mariners and then he like came back?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they got Tyson Gillies, Felipe Amont, and JC Ramirez. And do you know who any of those players are?
I do. Felipe Amont I've heard of. I believe he's in their bullpen.
Okay, so that's what they got for...
I mean, not a great player, just a player who's in the major leagues.
Yeah, that's what they got for him. So I think what they're doing is I know that they have been in talks with the Red Sox about Mookie Betts or Rosny Castillo or another one of their younger guys, and the Red Sox have just been hesitant to trade them. I think they're determined to get something, if not major league ready, very close for Cole Hamels to... Mm-hmm. You know, sort of be like, look, okay, well, yes, we traded Cole Hamels, but look what we got for him. And they may be waiting for desperation. At the trade deadline, what happens if at the trade deadline, you know, the Red Sox are cruising along and one of their pitchers goes down? Then they might talk about Mookie Betts for Rosny Castillo to get Hamels.
It's almost like playing poker and slow playing aces and not making much and then waiting a few hands and it just gets progressively worse. Like you have aces, kings, queens, jacks, tens, 10-9, 10-8, 10-7 suited. Like it's just every hand it's getting worse and worse and your chances to make a lot of money or win with the hand are just diminishing every year with this guy. He's going to be 32 next year. No one wants to trade for him and try to sign him to a big contract, right? Because he's going to walk and he's going to ask for his final contract. Nobody wants to do that at 32. Can you imagine what they could have gotten for him 5 years ago? 4 years ago. Let's say 4 years ago. They could have gotten a haul.
They were still in their contending window 4 years ago. I think that's the thing is you're baffled by the fact that they haven't gotten anything for him, and I agree, but it's not that surprising to me. They have Ruben Amaro Jr. running the team. Like he's
a disaster. I mean, you could go to the Hunter Pence trade too. I mean, you didn't even mention that. We've ripped off the Phillies for a while now.
What was it, Nate? Was that Nate Shearholtz and some garbage filler catcher?
Tommy Joseph, who is he's not one of their top prospects anymore. Never mind.
Tommy Joseph, let's see. Tommy Joseph, he plays minor league baseball for the Philadelphia Phillies. He's 23. Okay, so we ripped him off. We ripped him off hard. I mean,
of course.
Come on, Hunter Pence was, I contend we don't win... We're sitting with one World Series victory without Hunter Pence.
Agreed.
Yeah, so they are dumb and stupid and a bad team. So With that having been said, anything else you want to say about the Philadelphia Phillies?
Yes, but just one more thing, and to do it real quick, because I am the prospect guy, I would like talk about their top prospect, Mikel Franco.
Oh, yes, the one bright spot, the diamond in the turd.
The diamond in the turd, yes, I like it. I like that. fortunately, he plays third base and first base, which they very well may need in the coming future. He did not have a great season last year in AAA, although they are going to have to bring him to the major leagues because they just – this all this talk about Cody Ashey is just silly. They need a real hitter in there. He hit 16 home runs, 257 average, 299 OBP, three stolen bases with an 81-30 K-to-walk ratio. Not great in AAA last year, but I think they're going to bring him up anyway, and everybody seems to like him a lot, so I like him too, I guess. Right?
When's it? Yeah, everybody does, so you're part of everybody, right? So I guess technically I like him too.
By default, I like Michael.
Yeah, if everybody like, when's he supposed to be up? Is he a mid-season 2015 guy? Is he going to be around 2016?
Yes. Mid-season 2015. Is when they're expecting to bring him up. And, you know, he's going to be one of those guys, if I had to guess, they have no reason to bring him up immediately so they can contend because they're not going to. He'll be up after the trade deadline to delay as much time on the clock as possible, or to delay the clock as much as possible. And after they've traded just because they're going to have to trade Hamels this year. We've said it for a while, but this is definitely the last year they have to trade him. Mm-hmm. And they could it would be foolish not to trade Utley too, and maybe eat some salary for Ryan Howard and get him off the team and just roll out Mikel Franco after the All-Star break or after the trade deadline next year.
Yeah, that might be a good call. And it says a lot about this team when you're like, all right, here's the best bet for what they can do. They can trade this guy, trade this guy, trade this guy, trade this guy. Just blow it up. It's so bad. So what you're saying, Joe, is that if Joe Panic doesn't do as well as he did last year, we could go out and get Chase Utley, and then the Giants could win another championship.
I'm
you're like, I
want to say the same thing for Brandon, but I love Brandon Belt, so I can't say it, you know? So I would rather have Brandon Belt any day than the corpse of Ryan Howard. I just
What if the Giants spontaneously go into the AL and then we need a DH? There you go.
There you go. Yeah, bring in Utley or Howard.
There you go.
Any of these other guys that can't field.
Well, in the case of some of them field or hit, but
I would honestly be more excited if they brought back Jerome Williams.
Oh, God,
at this point,
the worst. Joe, can we just put everything aside? Jerome Williams is the worst. You understand this, right?
He is not the worst. He is the second best pitcher on the Phillies.
So he is then fourth worst.
Fourth worst. Can I just make something? Can I just say something? In Philly, when he came over at the trade deadline last year, 2.83 ERA, baby.
Wow. Championship. He's gonna play for a contender this year.
Where does he rank in the Cy Young, in the NL Cy Young race?
It's Kershaw,
Harvey, Fernandez.
Him, Fernandez, Mad Bum, him again, that's how good he is. He's like number two and number five.
Like the gap in his teeth. You can't be back to back.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no.
Come on. All right. It's been almost 2 hours now, so I think it's time to wrap up the Phillies. Our goal of shortening these things did not really go as planned. So anything else you want to say on the Phillies show?
Nothing.
Before we wrap up? Anything else you want to say at all before we wrap this up? Any shout-outs, any...
Just to let people know that we are going to probably be releasing the AL East podcast next after this one. We're going to try to get that done perhaps
this weekend and maybe release them all as a giant chunk?
That's what I'm thinking, because so pull back the curtain a little bit. Joe and I recorded a podcast over a week ago, and since the last time we recorded a podcast, I actually have a new computer, and I am still trying to remember how I did it before. It had something to do with transferring it and converting it to Audacity. I'm still working on it, getting it posted. So it's probably going to – I'm going to figure it out, and then I'm going to post them all at once, hopefully this weekend. So.
Well, I found it on YouTube. I'm not sure if that's still available, but
yeah,
it showed up on YouTube.
So it's supposed to be like you take that, and then you convert it. And anyways, nobody cares about that, but okay. I'm still trying to remember how to do that. It's not like getting back on a bicycle. So if there's nothing else you want to say, Joe?
One final thing. Guess who else is on the Phillies? I mean, it's just to solidify the fact that Amaro's been spying on our dreams from 8 years ago.
Oh, God, it's Jeff Francoeur.
It's Jeff Francoeur.
Oh, God, I just saw him. This team's so bad. They're so unbelievably bad. They're just the worst. They're objectively the worst team. You know, I was saying the Phillies or the Nationals might be the best team in baseball?
Yeah.
Are the Phillies the worst team in baseball?
I think it's undoubtedly. Is there anybody that even comes close?
I don't know. This is uncharted territory here. I didn't even think about that. They might be the worst team in baseball.
How about the 99.5 losses?
99. It's so hard. It's so much easier to win 100 than it is to lose 100. Like,
I agree.
They might actually be the worst.
I mean, you got to imagine. This
Colorado?
They're going to have to trade their best players this year. And what is the team going to look like after that when they have Michael Franco, their best prospect, is not even really ready to make the leap?
Yeah. Wow, Jesus. This team's bad. Yeah, they're easily the worst team in baseball. There's nothing that's positive about them, and I can say at least 2 to 3 good things about every team, except for them. So they're easily the worst team in baseball. All right.
Yeah, agreed. And with that, blech, let's get out of here.
Blech, let's get out of here. All right, guys, thanks for listening.
Adios.